Cambridge Certificate in Advanced English 4 by the University of Cambridge Local Examination Syndicate in conjunction with Cambridge University Press. This recording is copyright. Cassette 1. Side 1. This is the Cambridge Certificate in Advanced English Listening Test. Test 1. This paper requires you to listen to a selection of recorded material and answer the accompanying questions. There are four parts to the test, 1, 2, 3, and 4. You will hear part 2 once only. All the other parts of the test will be heard twice. There will be a pause before each part to allow you to look through the questions, and other pauses to let you think about your answers. At the end of every pause, you will hear this sound. You should write your answers on the question paper. You will have 10 minutes at the end to transfer your answers to the separate answer sheet. The tape will now be stopped. You must ask any questions now, as you will not be allowed to speak during the test. Now open your question paper and look at part 1. Part 1. You will hear a talk about a product called Aquaba sauce. For questions 1 to 10, complete the notes. You will hear the recording twice.
And now Joan Yates discovers the origins of Aquaba sauce.
The Australians say it's absolutely brilliant on barbecues. The French claim it brings out the piquancy of steak tartare. And there's nothing the Chinese like better than to dip their dim sum in it. In fact, Aquaba sauce is a product that's on the tip of just about everyone's tongue. Maurice Bond started it all on his return to the town of Charlton in England from India in 1835. At a chemist's shop in Tower Street, he handed over a secret recipe for a special spicy sauce. Mr. John Ford was behind the counter, and so was Mr. William Stott. They had the knowledge. They concocted the ingredients and they kept a little for themselves. One day, when they were clearing the cellar out, they found it, dusted it off, brought it back up, tried it, and eureka, Aquaba sauce. They then began commercial production in 1837, each bottle bearing the words genuine and original on labels. A High Court order would later prevent other sauce manufacturers from using these words. In 1904 came royal approval, the ultimate acclaim. And with the help of explorers, Aquaba sauce started to reach many parts of the world. For example, Colonel Middleton was on his way to China, and he stopped off in Tibet to pay his respects to the High Priest, the High Lama. He found that the poor old High Lama was not very well, so he left him some of the sauce and proceeded on his way. He came back some 2 or 3 years later, called in to see how things were, and lo and behold, the High Lama had made a miraculous recovery. Until the 1950s, Aquaba sauce bottles were hand-wrapped in special paper. In the US, they continue the tradition to this day. The ingredients are on the bottle for all to see. Molasses from the West Indies, anchovies from the Mediterranean, tamarinds from India. But what happens to these ingredients behind the closed doors of the Aquaba factory remains a closely guarded secret known only to 4 key employees. Inside the making house, in vats holding 30,000 litres, The young sauce is matured for months on end. In two other locations, there are the lines of maturation vessels, in which the separate ingredients stand for 3 years. Eventually, they're brought together and slowly stirred. They produce 12 million bottles a year in the UK alone, and they make it under license in the US, Canada, and Australia. Its shelf life, they claim, is indefinite. They still pass on the original recipe by word of mouth, and they still retain the distinctive long-necked glass chemist's bottle. After all, to change the design or go for plastic would be to change a winning formula.
Now you will hear the recording again.
And now Joan Yates discovers the origins of a Quaba sauce.
The Australians say it's absolutely brilliant on barbecues. The French claim it brings out the piquancy of steak tartare. And there's nothing the Chinese like better than to dip their dim sum in it. In fact, a Quaba sauce is a product that's on the tip of just about everyone's tongue. Maurice Bond started it all on his return to the town of Charlton in England from India in 1835. At a chemist's shop in Tower Street, he handed over a secret recipe for a special spicy sauce. Mr. John Ford was behind the counter, and so was Mr. William Stott. They had the knowledge. They concocted the ingredients and they kept a little for themselves. One day, when they were clearing the cellar out, they found it, dusted it off, brought it back up, tried it, and eureka, a Quaba sauce. They then began commercial production in 1837, each bottle bearing the words genuine and original on labels. A High Court order would later prevent other sauce manufacturers from using these words. In 1904 came royal approval, the ultimate acclaim. And with the help of explorers, a Quaba sauce started to reach many parts of the world. For example, Colonel Middleton was on his way to China and he stopped off in Tibet to pay his respects to the High Priest, the High Lama. He found that the poor old High Lama was not very well, so he left him some of the sauce and proceeded on his way. He came back some 2 or 3 years later, called in to see how things were, and lo and behold, the High Lama had made a miraculous recovery. Until the 1950s, a Quaba sauce bottles were hand-wrapped in special paper. In the US, they continue the tradition to this day. The ingredients are on the bottle for all to see. Molasses from the West Indies, anchovies from the Mediterranean, tamarinds from India. But what happens to these ingredients behind the closed doors of the a Quaba factory remains a closely guarded secret known only to 4 key employees. Inside the making house, in vats holding 30,000 litres, the young sauce is matured for months on end. In 2 other locations, there are the lines of maturation vessels, in which the separate ingredients stand for 3 years. Eventually, they're brought together and slowly stirred. They produce 12 million bottles a year in the UK alone, and they make it under license in the US, Canada, and Australia. Its shelf life, they claim, is indefinite. They still pass on the original recipe by word of mouth, and they still retain the distinctive long-necked glass chemist's bottle. After all, to change the design or go for plastic would be to change a winning formula.
That is the end of part one. Part two. You will hear an announcement about a change in transport arrangements. For questions 11 to 18, complete the notes the speaker is using. Listen very carefully, as you will hear the recording once only.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. First of all, on behalf of Seaways Midland, let me apologise for keeping you waiting so long. I realise that you have been severely inconvenienced. The ferry will be sailing at 1400 hours. That's 2 o'clock this afternoon. Journey time is estimated at just under 3.5 hours. You will be entitled to compensation, and hopefully you will be at your destination soon. We have organised a relief ferry, the Sea Life. Passengers who booked cabins will unfortunately not be able to have cabins on the relief ferry, as this is an older vessel and does not have cabin facilities. It is, however, a very comfortable ship, so please don't worry. On board, you will all be entitled to a free meal with free wine for those that want it. On the subject of compensation, passengers will receive a fixed sum of £20 per booking from Seaways. That's £20 per booking, not per person. Oh yes, and those passengers that book cabins will have the cabin surcharge refunded to them at the ferry offices at the same time, on production of the cabin ticket. Plus, you can claim £10 for every hour that you've had to wait, which will be paid by the travel insurance company, Medway Insurance, not Seaways, but Medway, and their address is on your tickets. Please do not apply to the ferry company for this allowance. You can collect your £20 voucher from the Seaways office on arrival at your port of entry to Britain. Please have your tickets with you as proof of your booking. Passengers without tickets will not be entitled to this compensation. Please accept my apologies again. Hopefully the dispute which has caused the delay will be settled soon. I do wish you a pleasant voyage and thank you for your cooperation.
That is the end of part two. Part three. You will hear a woman on a radio program interviewing a driving instructor about his job. For questions 19 to 26, choose the correct answer A, B, C, or D. You will hear the recording twice.
We've invited Fred Watson, a driving instructor with over 20 years' experience, to talk to us about learning to drive. Well, Fred, I suppose you must find your job frustrating at times.
Not at all. I enjoy it most of the time. But, of course, you do get the odd difficult customer. Most people are very impatient to pass the test as quickly as possible in order to keep their expenditure down.
Would you say it's expensive to learn to drive these days, then?
Well, it depends on several things. If you come to a private instructor like me, it's probably going to be a bit less expensive than going to one of the big schools. The thing is, people have usually heard of the big schools and trust their reputation, whereas I tend to rely more on personal recommendations.
Does that mean you have to try harder to get customers?
Not now. When I started, I had to, but in fact, I'm fully booked at the moment, as my prices are quite competitive.
Learning to drive is usually regarded as a rather nerve-wracking experience for the learner. What do you think?
Well, it can be, but I try to get my clients to unwind before the lesson. I ask them to sit quietly in a driver's seat for a few moments with their eyes closed. You'd be surprised how it changes some people. They feel much more ready to drive if they've had a few quiet moments.
Yes. I suppose some people are more nervous than others. What would you say makes people most nervous?
Hard to say. Probably it's the fear of not being able to react fast enough. At first they're trying to master the controls of the car. Then they start worrying about whether they're in the right part of the road and whether they've signalled in time and so on.
Yes, there seem to be so many things to remember at once.
Yeah.
I remember thinking I'd never master all of it, however long I practiced.
Usually people master the controls fairly quickly, but they have to think more about what they're doing, and until it feels almost automatic, they still make silly mistakes, which occasionally lead to accidents.
So, how soon can you let a pupil take total control of the car?
It differs from one person to another, of course, but generally speaking, I allow them to drive without dual control when I'm certain they can use the gears correctly, stop in an emergency, and have reasonable awareness of other road users.
What kind of person makes a good driver, then?
Well, you're asking me to commit myself here, aren't you? Well, first of all, let me say I have no evidence to suggest that either men or women are better drivers. What I would say, though, is that a certain level of confidence is necessary, a belief that you can and will succeed. But it's dangerous to be overconfident, and you can end up making wrong decisions. I'm afraid some young people are over-enthusiastic and start by driving too fast and taking risks. Now, I have to warn them that this approach is not going to make them into a good driver. What I like to see is someone who's prepared to take time and patience to develop the skill.
Do you think intelligence has anything to do with it?
Depends how you define it. Do you mean academic ability or practical good sense?
Well, I suppose I'm asking you whether either of these is relevant.
Practical good sense, alertness and confidence are more important. But you also need a reasonable memory, as you have to get through the part of the test where you recognise signs and symbols. And, of course, you need to know them when you're a driver out there on your own.
Yes, and with the volume of cars on the road today, quick reactions are essential too.
That's right. Driving is getting more demanding all the time, so we must make sure people learn efficiently in the first place and give them value for money.
Well, I'm sure Fred's pupils are getting value for money. Thank you for talking to us, Fred.
Sure.
And good luck to all you listeners who are about to take your driving test.
Now you will hear the recording again.
We've invited Fred Watson, a driving instructor with over 20 years' experience, to talk to us about learning to drive. Well, Fred, I suppose you must find your job frustrating at times.
Not at all. I enjoy it most of the time. But, of course, you do get the odd difficult customer. Most people are very impatient to pass the test as quickly as possible in order to keep their expenditure down.
Hmm. Would you say it's expensive to learn to drive these days, then?
Well, it depends on several things. If you come to a private instructor like me, it's probably going to be a bit less expensive than going to one of the big schools. The thing is, people have usually heard of the big schools and trust their reputation, whereas I tend to rely more on personal recommendations.
Hmm. Does that mean you have to try harder to get customers?
Not now. When I started, I had to, but in fact, I'm fully booked at the moment, as my prices are quite competitive.
Learning to drive is usually regarded as a rather nerve-wracking experience for the learner. What do you think?
Well, it can be, but I try to get my clients to unwind before the lesson. I ask them to sit quietly in a driver's seat for a few moments with their eyes closed.
Hmm.
You'd be surprised how it changes some people. They feel much more ready to drive if they've had a few quiet moments.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I suppose some people are more nervous than others. What would you say makes people most nervous?
Hard to say. Probably it's the fear of not being able to react fast enough. At first they're trying to master the controls of the car.
Mm-hmm.
Then they start worrying about whether they're in the right part of the road and whether they've signalled in time and so on.
Yes, there seem to be so many things to remember at once.
Yeah.
I remember thinking I'd never master all of it, however long I practiced.
Usually people master the controls fairly quickly, but they have to think more about what they're doing, and until it feels almost automatic, they still make silly mistakes, which occasionally lead to accidents.
Mm. So how soon can you let a pupil take total control of the car?
It differs from one person to another, of course, but generally speaking, I allow them to drive without dual control when I'm certain they can use the gears correctly, stop in an emergency, and have reasonable awareness of other road users.
What kind of person makes a good driver, then?
You're asking me to commit myself here, aren't you? Well, first of all, let me say I have no evidence to suggest that either men or women are better drivers. What I would say, though, is that a certain level of confidence is necessary, a belief that you can and will succeed. But it's dangerous to be overconfident, and you can end up making wrong decisions. I'm afraid some young people are over-enthusiastic and start by driving too fast and taking risks.
Mm.
Now, I have to warn them that this approach is not going to make them into a good driver. What I like to see is someone who's prepared to take time and patience to develop the skill.
Do you think intelligence has anything to do with it?
Depends how you define it. Do you mean academic ability or practical good sense?
Well, I suppose I'm asking you whether either of these is relevant.
Practical good sense, alertness and confidence are more important. But you also need a reasonable memory, as you have to get through the part of the test where you recognise signs and symbols.
Mm.
And, of course, you need to know them when you're a driver out there on your own.
Yes, and with the volume of cars on the road today, quick reactions are essential too.
That's right. Driving is getting more demanding all the time, so we must make sure people learn efficiently in the first place and give them value for money.
Well, I'm sure Fred's pupils are getting value for money. Thank you for talking to us, Fred.
Sure.
And good luck to all you listeners who are about to take your driving test.
That is the end of part three. Part four. This part consists of two tasks. You will hear various people talking about the experience of winning something. Look at task one. For questions 27 to 31, match the extracts as you hear them with the people listed A to H. Now look at task two. For questions 32 to 36, match the extracts as you hear them with the topics listed A to H. You will hear the recording twice. While you listen, you must complete both tasks.
It was such a wonderful surprise when the letter arrived. I'd sent in a couple of pictures I'd taken in the garden while I was still in work and then forgotten about it. You never think it could really happen to you, do you? The money certainly came in handy until I found something else.
I was very sceptical when she first started going in for them. You know, when they're at that age and get these ideas, you worry, don't you? I'd never really seen her as exceptionally clever or well-read. I suppose you don't with your own. She certainly doesn't get her brains from me, and that's for sure.
Well, we only started to play when we stopped working, and we certainly never intended to go in for competitions. It's a game that suits people of our age, sort of slow-moving, good exercise. And then we both found that we not only enjoyed it, but were rather good at it. And so now we've got this cup. Strange, really.
I don't know why mine turn out better than anyone else's. Perhaps it's something to do with the soil. And of course, it's not only a matter of size. To win, they have to be perfect in every way, and that comes from a lot of loving care and attention.
Well, the idea came to me one day in the garden as I was jotting down a few ideas. I thought, what would I do if I won a lot of money? Would it ruin everything, or would it be a new beginning? It's ironic that it should win, but literary prizes are not in the big league financially, so I won't be having any of those problems myself.
Now you will hear the recording again. Remember, you must complete both tasks.
It was such a wonderful surprise when the letter arrived. I'd sent in a couple of pictures I'd taken in the garden while I was still in work and then forgotten about it. You never think it could really happen to you, do you? The money certainly came in handy until I found something else.
I was very sceptical when she first started going in for them. You know, when they're at that age and get these ideas, you worry, don't you? I'd never really seen her as exceptionally clever or well-read. I suppose you don't with your own. She certainly doesn't get her brains from me, and that's for sure.
Well, we only started to play when we stopped working, and we certainly never intended to go in for competitions. It's a game that suits people of our age, sort of slow-moving, but good exercise. And then we both found that we not only enjoyed it, but were rather good at it. And so now we've got this cup. Strange, really.
I don't know why mine turn out better than anyone else's. Perhaps it's something to do with the soil. And of course, it's not only a matter of size. To win, they have to be perfect in every way, and that comes from a lot of loving care and attention.
Well, the idea came to me one day in the garden as I was jotting down a few ideas. I thought, What would I do if I won a lot of money? Would it ruin everything, or would it be a new beginning? It's ironic that it should win, but literary prizes are not in the big league financially, so I won't be having any of those problems myself.
That is the end of part four. There will now be a 10-minute pause to allow you to transfer your answers to the separate answer sheet. Be sure to follow the numbering of all the questions. The question papers and answer sheets will then be collected by your supervisor. Teacher, pause the tape here for 10 minutes. Remind your students when they have 1 minute left. That is the end of the test. That's the end of side one.